bears its effect or impels the next lifetime. In that case, the eighth and ninth members of the 12 links of dependent arising, attachment and grasping, in this particular lifetime, would nourish or further the potency that was established in the mind by that action of murder. And through the nourishment of that potency by attachment and grasping, it would become fully actualized near the time of death, such that it would be ready to produce the next lifetime. This is the 10th member of dependent arising called existence.
That didn't nam shi ga ne da da dine chi won gon du che ni da ah ha so le se di zua che ra che ni da kan da chi sa ne pa tu ye ba ina da nian song jin ge jin da pa tu shi zu da pa tu zu de ne da pa tu di ga be che le ya da kang du jin ju gi ni lu jin zu zu ya le.
Thus, in this way, the state of death would finally become manifest, the life would be finished, the person die, and pass into the intermediate state, because here we're talking about a rebirth in a bad migration, in a low type of life, which requires an intermediate state between the last life and the next lifetime. So the person would pass into the intermediate state, and then with the cessation of the intermediate state, would take rebirth.
That is rebirth le yundu kyewe tenji tshe. Tinyam doli ya ta su yewe chani yundu mingsu tshe. Da mingsu tenji. Tene, eni, kasa di, kyeshi. Kyeshi tumni, da kyeshi didi ya, pada mingi kyeshi la soba tshe, luji kyeshi tangu yungu ya re. Tene, eni, ongbu tshu yewe chi na, eni rinbe, ta zuji mebe tshe. Ongbu rimjen du kyeshi da ya, ongbu tenji du kyeshi ya rikshik duwa.
So with that, there would be the 11th member, birth, and simultaneously one would be achieving the 4th member, which is called name and form. With it, the 6 sources of consciousness begin, in that the physical source of consciousness first begins along with name and form, this being a serial development of the sense organs for beings that are not born in a spontaneous but in a gradual manner. Then due to the development of the 6 organs or the 6 sources of consciousness, there would be contact, which is defined as a distinguishing of objects as pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Independence on the dependent arising of contact, there would arise feeling, this being of 3 types, pleasurable, painful, or neutral. And then through the development of feeling and the misapprehension of feeling as inherently existent, one develops attachment and grasping. And through the development of the conception of inherent existence with respect to those feelings, this resulting in attachment, one engages in other actions which deposit potencies in the consciousness that will produce other future lifetimes. Then the last member of dependent arising, the 12th, is that of aging and death. Aging being the maturation of mind and body, and death being death being the discarding or cessation of a similar continuum of mind and body.
tāwa tētār tēndē yāngā chūnyi tī tā ngāma ngāme chūchēni chīmat kē yuruwa.
Now, with these 12 links of dependent arising, it's a matter of the later members being produced in dependence upon the production of the former members. In the same way, the cessation of the later members depends upon the cessation of the earlier members. These 12 members can be condensed down into three categories. Seven of them being the afflictions, being suffering, and two of them, action and existence, being included in karma, and then the remaining three, ignorance, attachment, and grasping, being included among afflictions. This then is the mode of procedure of the first two of the Four Noble Truths, true sufferings and their true origins. Because the root of this process of suffering is ignorance, in order to overcome suffering, it's necessary to rely on the antidote to ignorance. The antidote to ignorance is a wisdom consciousness that has a mode of apprehension exactly opposite to ignorance. Once ignorance is an erroneous consciousness, its antidote is an object, is a consciousness that perceives the nature of phenomena correctly. Because ignorance and wisdom have as their object of observation the same object, but apprehend it in an exactly different manner, they serve to counteract each other. Then, in addition to that, ignorance is Since ignorance is an erroneous consciousness, it doesn't have any valid foundation. Whereas because wisdom is a non-erroneous consciousness, it has a valid foundation, due to which ignorance cannot be increased limitlessly, whereas wisdom can be increased limitlessly. It is through this that it can be understood that ignorance can be removed. And then where is ignorance removed? It is removed in the sphere of the reality of the emptiness of inherent existence. Now this wisdom that realizes the final mode of being or final mode of subsistence of phenomena, what is its object? What is this final mode of subsistence? It is the emptiness of inherent existence of all phenomena. Thus, if one knows or realizes emptiness, one can gain nirvana, whereas if one does not know the final status of phenomena, their emptiness of inherent existence, one is caught in cyclic existence. Therefore, cyclic existence, or samsara and nirvana, hinge on whether emptiness, the emptiness of inherent existence, is known or not. So first of all, one does not know the emptiness of inherent existence now, thus it is necessary to come to know it. It is first known in a dualistic manner with the in the context of the pollution or being, you know, the pollution of having an internal image as the appearing object. Then gradually one comes to know emptiness directly, nakedly, and through accustoming to that, one can be liberated. This is a Buddhist interpretation of life in terms of the 12 links of dependent arising.
Oh, this is my talk, the second part. Now, any question? Now, 15 minutes.
So the first question is, to what extent did the remoteness of Tibet contribute to the uniqueness of Buddhism?
This person feels that Buddhism arose only in Tibet, so because it was a high mountainous area, that made it unique.
The Pearl Kabaddi. Now, the difference is what sort of.
Tibetan Buddhism came from India, and its uniqueness is that it is a complete form of Buddhism. It seems that when one looks into it, most Buddhist countries do not have the complete forms of Indian Buddhism. In this way, it becomes unique. Do humans possess free will?
Everything is earlier determined. So is there any free will? Or is everything just determined by karma?
Dan nang bae chue ge tane xia bei yin na. Shi zhe. An da tege le ban nan xing ge. Da lai ji tane yong de ji ba. De lai ji su se suo na, rang ge sem ji suo ba.
In the Buddhist way, one's own pleasure and pain is due to karma actions. But who is it who did the karma? It's oneself who did those actions. It is said that the fundamental nature of the mind is not affected or polluted by defilement. So thus the basis then is free. This pure, basically pure nature of the mind is called the Buddha nature. Would it ever be possible for the sophisticated society of today to accept the philosophy you offer and return to a simple lifestyle?
Yeah. What you're talking about is a simpler lifestyle.
Simple.
I don't know if what I'm saying is so simple because I certainly say that we also need material advancement. Do you consider the political activity of the Sangha to be compatible with the Dharma?
Is
it possible to put it together for the Sangha to be political compatible?
That didn't mean you are the Kasuri. Zawa di Churlia, Chur the tumor to say, Churli Chow in the Messiah, it's all Gununra Levy.
Whether an action is religious or not depends upon the motivation.
So you see, so long your motivation is clear, I mean, right one, then you see, with that motivation, all different action, including political act, I regard as a dharma act. After all, you see, political is one of the instrument in order to solve human problem, certain problem. I mean, certainly not created. I mean, main aim is not creation of problem. It is an instrument to solving certain problem. So it's by itself, nothing wrong.
What could Buddhists do to help your country?
That did not political search to why.
This has political implications, and if I talked about it, we'd get into politics.
But certainly, I will request, you see, prayer for unfortunate people. Not only Buddhist brothers, sisters, also is various the religious people, Christian monk, Christians, please pray for unfortunate people in general, on Tibetan, I think tonight, my Khasa, in particular, like that. Yeah.
Do you really experience life as you have been talking about it?
Then I don't know.
How do animals fit in the Buddhist philosophy?
Animals.
We consider animals to be sentient beings. How does Buddhism regard organ transplants, life prolonging devices, and so forth? Are there any texts that one could consult as a background for such issues?
What's that?
You know, the organ transplants and prolonging life and so forth. Are there any texts or doctrines that would help to decide the ethics? On these matters, one needs to consider the particular circumstances.
The other day, I participated one discussion session.
Yes.
About Jilada.
There was a seminar on in vitro fertilization, euthanasia, and so forth.
So you see the things. The special case
and these matters, one has to consider the specific case under question.
That again, the previous question to what?
Regarding the former question on whether I really experience life as I'm talking about it. in the way that
put the question very sincerely, then I will explain something.
Yes, it is.
Now, as I mentioned earlier, you see, my whole, how to say, life experience, not happy one, not happy type. So I mean, some difficult experience passed through. So, you see, I regard the difficult period is the one of the most important experience. Through that, you can learn many new experience and many new ideas. And you see, through that way, one way, it helped me made me more realistic, more closer to the reality. If your life is very easy and everything goes smoothly, then you see there is time to pretend it in certain thing. But when you are facing real desperate situation, then there is no time to pretend. Right. Yes. So you have to deal the reality. So it helped a lot. And also, you see, through difficult experience, you can increase the real human determination. So you see, it gives you real inner strength. And also, through that way, you can understand value of anger. And instead of being angry, if you develop a deep respect for troublemaker, on the basis of, you see, because the troublemaker created such unpleasant thing, therefore you can get the opportunity to practice, how to say, tolerance and patience. Without that opportunity, we cannot practice in the real sense of patience and tolerance. We cannot practice patience with our teacher or with our kindred friend. But patience and tolerance can practice only when you face enemy. So without that practice, we cannot develop a real qualified compassion and love. I mean, here you see, real qualified compassion is, you see, covered every sentient being, not only your friend or few people. The real compassion is based on reason. This ordinary, you see, sense of compassion, love, is very limited, actually very much influenced by desire or attachment. So you see, if the questioner put sincerely that question, then I would like to express these words.
How can the mere I serve as a base for predispositions? Surely they must be imprinted on a subtle consciousness.
The subtle consciousness, the young nalaya, ne takshirwa. It is true, subtle consciousness you are.
It is true there are subtler consciousnesses.
There are many different levels of consciousness. It's a grosser consciousness, and a deeper consciousness, and finally the innermost subtle consciousness. Now that is the basis of cyclic
existence,
or samsara and nirvana, both on that basis. But now you see, question, whether that innermost subtle mind is independent or not. Again, that
Again, even that innermost subtle consciousness cannot be found under analysis. Its nature also is an emptiness of inherent existence. From between the self and the mental and physical aggregates, it is a mental aggregate. Therefore, it is an object of use of the self.
Even that level, we can say, my innermost subtle consciousness. So that means that still, that is something belonging. The una is mere I, the I. The I itself, if we investigate, we cannot find. So therefore, there is I, definitely. Because there is I, there is other. If there is no I, no reason, others being. So you say, I is there, but cannot find. Therefore, we say, the mere I.
Could you please explain again why ignorance cannot be increased limitlessly, whereas wisdom can? Even when we generate strong hatred, even if it is very strong, there is no way to generate it or cultivate it limitlessly. If it were possible to generate hatred limitlessly, then you would have to say that in that person there would not be even the slightest moment of the generation of love. For a consciousness to be cultivated limitlessly or generated into a limitless state, this depends upon cultivation in meditation. It is by way of reasoning. Through reasoning, one has to gain ascertainment. So with ignorance, however, there is no possibility of gaining ascertainment. As much as you look into whether objects exist in accordance with how they are conceived by ignorance, you find all the more that they do not exist as they are being conceived by ignorance. Whereas with wisdom, it is a matter that as much as one looks into it, so much more does one gain ascertainment. How does one achieve the wisdom which replaces ignorance? In the Buddhist way, there are a whole series and levels, stages of practice. These are contained within the topics of the three collections of the scriptures, these being the three trainings. In order for the training in wisdom to develop well, it is necessary to have one-pointed concentration. Thus, one needs the training in meditative stabilization. With our present type of mind, it is possible to research about emptiness and to realize it, but it is not possible for us to, with this type of scattered mind, to have a powerful consciousness realizing emptiness. Therefore, it is necessary to achieve one-pointed concentration a calm abiding of the mind. In order to develop that one-pointedness of mind, it is necessary to have powerful mindfulness and introspection. And for the sake of developing a strong mindfulness and introspection, one engages in the practice of ethics, the various levels of ethics. It is through such stages that one must proceed. The last question. Given that world population is increasing, how can this reconcile with reincarnation? Where do all the extra souls come from?
The population of this world is increasing, so there are more consciousnesses, more souls. And so where do they come from?
We live in huge galaxies.
This is limitless, according to Buddhist and believe the infinite galaxies, you see. So that galaxy correct chick cha chick tong chick cha chick tong do time of study.
Therefore, in some galaxies the number of sentient beings is diminishing, whereas in others it is increasing. So in this way, when we take rebirth, we're visiting other lands.
So in a sense, we are tourists. Always, you see, go round, round, round like that.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, when I said at the beginning that this was a unique occasion, I was really thinking of it in that people were coming to see His Holiness the Dalai Lama. But I think that everyone here tonight, for many years, will remember this night as a unique occasion in itself because of the participation of His Holiness with each one of us. I'd just like to thank Professor Jeffrey Hopkins, who is a professor of Buddhist philosophy and Tibetan language at the University of Virginia in the United States for his part in assisting the interpretation. Though really, I think His Holiness has much more command of English than a broken one. On your behalf, I would like to thank His Holiness for being here with us and for giving us such an illuminating evening. Thank you, sir.